Blog Talk Radio.
This is the 21st century, and we need to redefine revolution. This planet needs a people's revolution, a humanist revolution. Revolution is not about bloodshed or about going to the mountains and fighting. We'll fight if we are forced to. But the fundamental goal of revolution must be peace. We need a revolution of the mind. We need a revolution of the heart. We need a revolution of the spirit. The power of people is stronger.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, from San Joaquin County, California. Welcome to Shabaka's Black Experience to Enhance. Our air date today, ladies and gentlemen, is November 22nd, 2018. We're discussing black businesses and innovation. We're going to discuss briefly about black entrepreneurs in the 19th century. We'll also discuss about how a lot of them did not get paid justly for their efforts, how a lot of their patents were stolen. And also, too, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very interesting guest tonight that we'll be introducing shortly, and who will be introducing a new venture that could revolutionize the ride share industry. But first, let me key in on our guest right here, the one and only Mr. Robert X. How you doing this morning, Robert?
Man, I'm doing wonderful, Brother Shabaka. How about you?
Oh, I guess I'll live for an old guy. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I'm hanging in there.
That would be old and okay. Wisdom.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And then, of course, you know, as you know, is that we had a lot of, you know, black entrepreneurs and what have you, you know, from the 1860s and whatnot, you know, who invented things, man, from oil pumps on railroad trains, who invented things, man, like the couplings for the railroad cars and what have you, and various other things as well, too. And then, quite naturally, of course, they did not get their credit and proper recognition, you know, for the work that they did. Also, too, I see we got a caller here from the area code out of Denver, Colorado. Rattle 720. Okay, we're going to bring him in and have him join in on a conversation as well, too. Greetings there, Denver, Colorado. How you doing this morning?
How you doing, Brother Shabaka? It's Jesse Parrish, City Council at
okay.
Large candidate out of Denver, Colorado.
Yes, sir, and thank you so very, very much for joining our show this afternoon, or this morning, I should say, my time, and thank you once again for chiming in. Okay, so as we're discussing, you know, about the black entrepreneurs and the black business personnel, you know, that made grave discoveries, that made great discoveries, inventions, and ideas, and what have you, you know, from the field of medicine to inventing the typewriter to inventing the cell phone, you know, to even to the sisters, you know, who did all the configurations for some of those Apollo missions during the late 1960s when they were making travels to the moon. And then, of course, as we know, that we don't get the proper recognition. This is why it's very, very important that we emphasize our cohesiveness economically, is because when you look at it, every other group of people that comes to the United States, the first place they do is set up businesses within the black community, and they do quite well from what I've witnessed here in Oakland, California. Then you're seeing all the gentrification of how they're going in, buying up dilapidated properties, you know, that are in the inner cities. They take them, they evict the people, then they renovate the properties, and then they charge outlandish rents for it and what have you. And they're doing the same thing in San Francisco, Oakland, Los Angeles, what I see out here on the West Coast. And then also, too, our guest is going to be... Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm quite sure. Yeah, I've been to the Mile High City there, too, Mr. Paris. Yeah, absolutely. You see. So what we're going to do is that we're going to let Mr. Robert start off, you know, introducing this great new venture that I've been seeing across the net that could revolutionize the rideshare industry. Okay, Robert, you have the floor, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sorry about that. My name is Brother Robert, 11X Minor. Out of St. Louis, Missouri, and, you know, I'm an entrepreneur of 24 years, going on the 25th year, and when I say that,
okay,
that means I have not clocked in on nobody else's job in over 24 years, so I take entrepreneurship very, very seriously. We also have a group called BIB, Blacks in Business, which what we do there is we try to inform entrepreneurs, black entrepreneurs, how to stay in business by giving them the correct information that they need to stay in business. And we also teach about going to the trade shows as well as ownership of property, real estate. So I'm currently a driver for Uber and Lyft. Got into this because I wanted to see exactly what was going on in the rideshare industry. I saw something in it, a very quick way to replace income if you needed that. So I decided, I said, well, let me check this out. So I got into it, I studied it, and my initial goal was to actually create an app for we can have, as black people, we can have our own rideshare company as well. However,
yes, sir,
things happen, and I continue to drive as I am driving now, and and I just studied and learned more about this industry. Then an opportunity came along, and the opportunity is with the company that's about to launch out there, Shabaka, where you are. And,
yes, sir.
And it's in the rideshare industry, but this company is going to do something that Lyft and Uber and all the other companies failed to do, and that is make sure that the drivers are well compensated and then make the driver a partner to the business and not a slash employee of the business. So this is, for me, you know, I'm an entrepreneur that has always kept my eyes open and my ears open for that next big thing. And when I got the call from one of the executives that's a part of the company, I got a call from Mr. Al Powell. He was telling me about this wonderful opportunity. Didn't know I was driving for Uber and Lyft. So I just listened to him. Because by this time, it's 7 months I've been driving for them, and I've already peeped wrong with these companies. You know, the drivers don't get compensated for enough for all the liability that they have in terms of maintenance of the vehicle, in terms of insurance, in terms of gas, in terms of dealing with the customer. So as he was speaking to me about this new company, and I'm listening, and I was very impressed with the how they are presenting themselves into the marketplace. And the thing that actually caught my attention was the driver with the new company is going to make 100% of the fare. Right now, a Uber and Lyft driver is making somewhere between 50 to 65% of the fare. And
wow.
So that's a large chunk of the money of your effort. You know, you're talking 35 to 50%. Someone else is taking mm-hmm. out that type of money out of what you do. So
yes, sir.
The new company has looked into all the things that are wrong with these existing companies and said, we're going to do this different. We're going to give the driver 100% of all the fare. We're going to allow the driver to have a residual income based off of how many drivers he or she can bring into the company. We're not
okay.
only going to do that. We're going to, instead of allowing the executives of a company to benefit from stock options, let me go into that part of it. Uber is about to go public in the next, I'd say, by 2013, the first quarter of 2013. Uber right now
okay.
is a $70 billion company. And by the time
wow.
they go public, they're saying that they should be worth $120 billion in a market
mm-hmm.
that has not even matured. This is an industry right here that hasn't even matured. It's got so much more growth involved in it. So the company that I'm speaking of, they're going to allow the drivers to benefit from the stock options because the drivers are the heartbeat of the business, the drivers and the passengers. But you got to have drivers. If you got passengers and no drivers, you don't have no business. So the drivers
exactly.
now would be able to, yeah, they'd be able to benefit from the stock options. Then the passenger, what they're doing different with the passenger is they are allowing the passenger to make money off of doing something that they organically will do, which is share the app or talk about it to a friend or something like that. Now you can get paid for doing that as well. So when I heard all of this from Mr. Al Powell, that was about 7 o'clock in the evening time on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up the next day, and I called his wife, and I said, you know what, Ronnie, I want in on that. I mean, everything sounds good mathematically. They said, well, check out a webinar. I said, okay, well, let me check out the webinar. So I started listening to the webinars, and once I listened to the webinar, I knew then that I was going to be a part of something that was going to be major in the rideshare industry, but not only in the rideshare industry. This is going to make history. This company is about to make history, and it's just an opportunity that a lot of the times that we say, if I should have been involved in Microsoft or been involved in Google or those type of companies, but you really didn't have the opportunity. The opportunity is here, Shabaka. This is that next big thing, brother.
Okay, good, 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 real good. And also, too, you know, I would like to say, and we do emphasize here on Shabaka's Black Experience about us becoming economically self-sufficient, you know, as well, too, on a universal basis. Then also, too, this will provide jobs and more opportunities for within the community. Then also, too, this will allow the community to develop itself through cooperative economics. And as you and I have discussed, Brother Robert, I'm right here in the Bay Area. I'm right across the street, you know, or across the water from Uber and Lyft's front door, and they're doing quite well. And then I also just want to mention on the social media industry itself, here in Silicon Valley, as we all know, it's a multi-trillion-dollar industry. And then on previous podcasts, we have discussed of where they're getting the silicon, you know, how the silicon is getting here and whatnot. And then, like I said, every time I look at Frisco Bay and I see those cargo container ships coming in from Asia, we know exactly what's on there, which is the silicon that the Asians are getting up out of the Congo and what have you. You see, so we most definitely emphasize, you know, black business, doing for self, black innovation, and then also to the example of what this here was set for our youth is because, as we all know, is that when we go to school in the inner cities and what have you, the first thing they teach us how to do is how to go get a job. They teach us, you know, basic, you know, the 3 R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, but basically it's just for you to fill out a job application to go work for someone else. But however, there's no emphasis in our community to be entrepreneurs. And so I'm going to, you know, ask you, gentlemen, you know, just what is your opinions on that? How about you there, Mr. Jesse? What do you have to say about that, sir?
What I have to say about that is we've been programmed and conditioned to build other people's stuff up and not do for self and build our own stuff up. And then when we do build our own stuff up, we don't have a military to back it to keep it from getting destroyed.
Okay.
What happened with Black Wall Street?
Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I want to talk about that a little bit briefly, too, about Black Wall Street. You know, as we all know, that happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma there in 1921. And at that time, during segregation, you know, we were forced, you know, to deal with our own black professionals, our own black grocery clerks, our own black accountants, and our own black carpenters and what have you. So then what had happened was when it came with the Civil Rights Movement in the early 60s, then all the black customers would start taking their businesses and their money elsewhere, you know, to white businesses such as S.H. Kress, F.W. Woolworths, and what have you. And then, of course, as we all know, that during the Civil Rights era, they were the main ones, you know, who opposed us, you know, sitting at the lunch counter. And then, as Brother Malcolm had said, you know, many, many years ago, is that we're sitting here at a lunch counter begging for a cup of coffee when we should be out here building up our own restaurants. So this is really what I appreciate, you know, with Brother Robert X. Miner is doing right here. And I'm very, very interested in what he is doing as well, too. But also, too, gentlemen, I just want to turn it over a little bit here. You know, we're looking at the major black businesses that we have. Now, all of us are familiar with Ebony Magazine, okay? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as we know, John Hurl Johnson had started it off the south side of Chicago in the year 1945. Him and his wife were newly married at the time. And from what I understand, that Mr. Johnson had borrowed $500 on his mother's furniture to start the Ebony Magazine. And then, of course, as we do know about Motown with Mr. Gordy, you're starting the Motown Records as well, too, that made some of the greatest hits in the history of music, you know, as well. So it goes to show, ladies and gentlemen, that we do come from a stream of innovators. We do come from a stream of entrepreneurs. And what it is, and just like what Mr. Robert X. Miner had said, you have to get out there, man, and go get it. You know, you have to put forth the effort in it. And then also, too, is that this could be used to enhance the community by helping the drivers make more money, getting our people back and forth from point A to point B within the black community or where else that they have to go, you know, about their daily activities, you know, of staying alive. And then also, too, it's very, very important that our youth, you know, get involved in this as well, too. Yes, go ahead. Somebody had a comment.
No, I don't think nobody had a comment.
Oh, okay. All righty. Okay. All right. So, therefore, Robert, okay, emphasizing more here on the ride share industry. Okay. So, basically, with this third one that's coming out, okay, and you're saying that the drivers are going to get 100%, you know, of their revenue?
Right. Which is a major deal. I mean, it really is a major deal. You know, I mean, everybody is in a crunch in America, for the most part, you know, you got 95% of the population that that's living in not so good financial conditions, you know, household-wise, you know. So everybody's trying to do something to subsidize income. You know, entrepreneurship right now is probably at the all-time high as we have known it in the last 40 years. You know, so
yes, sir.
So the thing that we have to look for is a way to finance our ideals. Now, a question was posed to me the other day. Well, is this a black-owned company? And I wished I could have said yes, but I couldn't tell a lie. No, it's not a black-owned company. But however, I'm looking at mathematics. And the mathematics in the thing is what attracts me. Now, I have my own company.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I have my own business that I run here in St. Louis. And so I normally typically don't get involved in any type of other business unless it is something that really makes better sense to what I'm doing. Now,
right.
So I've been in business 24 years, so I haven't been involved in anything else because nothing else made better mathematical sense than what I'm doing up until now. You see?
Yes, sir.
Again, what attracts me is the ideal that I can get in on the ground floor of something that I know is going to go viral. I mean, once you get on the webinar and you listen to this thing, and a lot of times it sounds unreal. But then I had to bring this point to a person the other day. I said, well, can you imagine what it sounded like to people that came out to see Steve Jobs in a garage talking about vision for Apple? Can you imagine what that really looked like for somebody to say, man, this dude crazy. He in a damn garage.
Exactly.
And he's talking about to build a multi-billion-dollar company. Okay.
And it turned into a trillion-dollar industry.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So those type of opportunities don't come around often in our life, for one, but in the lives of a lot of people, but especially us as black people. We don't have that ground floor door open to us or that information privilege to us unless, like what happened to me. I mean, this was just something that it just happened. I mean, the guy tried to recruit me for Bitcoin, and I told him at the time, I don't have liquid cash just laying around to play with, you know, and wait for it to mature. My money has to be flipped right now. You know what I'm saying? I'm in a right now type of situation, shoot. I need cash right now. I need it to flip right now. You know what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
I usually stay away from everybody else's ideas and business until I heard this one. And it was so ironic because I was already driving for them. I went to drive for Uber and Lyft because it's a right now situation. So by it being a right now situation, I said, let me go and see how this thing works because that's doable. But now what I found out is the marketing side of these type of ideals and the infrastructure of these type of ideals, it costs money to do these type of things. It really costs money.
Yes, sir.
And if you don't have a venture capitalist, somebody that's you know, able to invest the money, then it may take you a while before you get it up and going. So this opportunity presented itself, and it's like, okay, I can take this money from what this opportunity is going to bring, and I can finance some of my own ideas. You know, so this is the reason why I approach yourself and other people about this company. Not that I'm so gung-ho on other people's stuff, because I'm not, but I'm more so gung-ho on the opportunity of building with the company from the ground up that I know and I believe, and then I know it's going to do well. It's in an industry that is booming, and as analysts predict, by 2030, they said 97 million people a day are going to be calling a rideshare company to get from A to B. Currently, right now, it's over 15 million people globally a day using rideshare as a way of transportation. So this thing got a lot of growth in it. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yeah, without a doubt. And then also, too, and then revenue could be generated from this rideshare industry and placed off and invested off into other adventures as well, too, you know, within the community. You see what I mean? And particularly yeah. for our young people is because of technology. And all this innovation, you know, this is their generation, you know. And then to quote somebody out of history, well, I got fewer tomorrows than yesterdays. But it's very, very important, you know, that our young people get the idea of entrepreneurship, becoming self-sufficient. You know, you can make revenue from this and invest it off into another industry. You see what I mean? It's because they are always innovating out here, you know, in the Bay Area. And then if you want to keep an eye on how they're doing it, always check the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Jose Mercury News, or what they would call the East Bay Times, because you know, like how the New York Times is always talking to you about Wall Street and the financial brokerage houses and what have you, because they're right there. So this is the same thing with the Chronicle, the East Bay Times, and the San Jose Mercury News does with Silicon Valley, because every day somebody's coming up with a new idea, every day, you know, somebody is innovating, you see, and they got the revenue over there. And I'm going to tell you, from what I've witness in the last 40 years, they have totally refaced the city of San Francisco, particularly in the financial district. So, because they tore down all those old buildings, movie houses, and what have you. They upgraded Market Street. I mean, you can go right down there, man. I believe the address is 1060 Market Street, and that there's Twitter's headquarters, you know, right there. And then throughout the city itself, you know, Spreaker's headquarters there, I believe. Also, too, you got the other little cities like San Bruno, where YouTube is. Then, of course, you got Mountain View, which is near San Jose, where Google is. Then you got Sunnyvale, where Yahoo is. So it is definitely a great deal of revenue to be generated here with this multimedia business, with this social media business. Then, of course, as Mr. X had pointed out about the ride share businesses, because it is definitely a booming industry. And then also, too, get this here, Robert, is that from what I understand a couple of years ago, that even the taxi cab companies like Yellow Cab or the independent cab drivers and what have you, see, they were trying to haul Uber and Lyft into court. You see what I mean? Because they're saying is, right. Well, you know, you're killing our industry right here and all that. And the only thing I did, man, was just rejoice. Is because the first time that I used a rideshare service, you know, it was real cool. In other words, I called up, I had the app, or I should say my friend had that because I was riding with him. And he says, hey, man, let me show you how this works. So he gets on his app, he keys in his phone. A driver came up, you know, with Uber, and he says, where you going? He keyed in the app, and the beauty of it is that everything is handled electronically. You see, so you're not passing no cash or anything like that. And plus that, the driver was courteous. The car was nice, neat, clean. As they say, it had the new car smell in it. You know what I'm saying? And then also, too, and with this industry booming, now is the time to get in on the ground floor of it. Okay, now let's look at the people, man, who invested off in Amway in the late 1950s and early 60s, okay? Now, they're at the top, you know, they're making their monies because, you see, Amway, you know, I'm not going to say it's played out, but what it is already had its core explosion. And then, you know, being a business major, being an entrepreneur myself, you know, although I've worked for other people, but, you know, but deep down inside, the drive was always to do something for myself. And this is what has to be emphasized more so on our youth as well, too, where they should be getting educated, you know, off in technology. They should be getting educated, you know, off in world history and world finance and what have you. Because look what's happening over there in Africa with the silicon, with the Chinese coming in there. See, this is what I mean, Rob, when I was talking about how I would sit there, man, and look at the ships roll in on Frisco Bay. All those are cargo container ships, man, coming from Hong Kong, coming from Asia, coming from Japan, you see, and I just know what's inside of those cargo containers. You know, they're all our cell phones, they're all our laptops, they're all our, you know, the mouses, the flash drives, and all of this, you see what I mean? And then quite naturally, of course, for some odd reason, folks, for the last few hundred years, if not a few thousand, they've always been going to our continent, getting this raw resources, working our people, man, and then they taking all the revenue up out of it. So what we need to do is to do a boomerang effect to acquire mass capital amongst ourselves. And then what we could do this here would give us some political might. You see what I mean? It's because, as you know, Mr. Paris, you know, a lot of these politicians, you know, there are those such as yourself that want to go out and do the right thing, that want to make a change for the people, that want to do a good, worthy cause for the community. But then again, you know, look who you got in office right there, right now there in Washington, D.C. You see what I mean? So that is telling us a lot of things right there. And then, of course, the general attitude of what he is purveying across the United States of America in regard to us as a people. So, yes, definitely it's time for us to become innovators and become some movers and shakers. You see what I'm saying? And then another thing I want to check out and just comment briefly on too, Robert, you know, let's look at Hollywood, California, or Los Angeles, okay? It's because, see, we don't have no power there in L.A., and I'm talking about as far as the movies are being made and things of this nature right here, is because now they emphasize on shattering the black family unit. It's because when you look at your major commercials or your major TV shows, what do you see? A white male and a black female and the kids. You see what I'm saying? But you don't see nothing out there in regard to the black male. So this is the perfect opportunity for us as men to go up here and make a mark for ourselves, you see, to secure the future, you know, for our families and our children, you know, and our people. And then it does not necessarily have to be a black-owned business. It's because revenue is a universal law and principle. What you do with the revenue as you acquire it, you know, is up to you, the individual, you see. So if we could emphasize more black businesses on that, fine. If more blacks can, you know, have a sustainable life and a good life, you know, of doing this, great, beautiful. Be sure to put that money off in your black bank. And also, too, the black bank, make sure you invested that money off into black businesses. You see what I mean? It's because I'm seeing a lot of things across the net, from Atlanta to Sierra Leone to Ghana, to even parts of Europe, where you do have a lot of black and African entrepreneurs, you know, that's coming up with very great innovative ideas and what have you, but the media does not give them the exposure that they need. You see what I mean? And then also, too, another trend that I've noticed in the black community out here on the West Coast, and I'm quite sure it's happening there in STL, and I'm sure it's happening there in the Mile High, just like with Chi in New York City, is that you remember when we always had the black town cereals and the black barbershops and the black hair salons in the black community? You remember that?
Right.
Okay, now that there was a very, very lucrative industry, you see, and a lot of women had made money like that, such as Madam C.J. Walker there. I believe that started in your neck of the woods there,
in
Mr. Denver, Paris.
Colorado.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes. And then I do believe that Ms. Brett Love did come to St. Louis, too. Robert, yeah, I believe she did, you know. So
and,
the point is right there.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
That was the influence of Annie Malone, who influenced Madam C.J. Walker.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Annie Malone,
okay.
She was the first. She was a millionaire here in St. Louis, brother. She was the first black millionaire. That woman really made a mark on this thing, brother. I mean, she really. So we got streets named after her here in St. Louis, and there's a town in the north side where she owns property. She did a lot of remarkable stuff here in the city, but she wasn't the type of person that really wanted to be known, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
She was the one that influenced Madam C.J. Walker.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a rich history, as you're saying, brother, about the black entrepreneurs.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, I want to say something, brother, about something to date as over the last 24 years of being an entrepreneur, being a leader in that ministry, you know, I would have to call that a ministry as well. You know, economics, entrepreneurship is a ministry because I'm running my mouth every day about it. And
absolutely.
You know, I'm almost assured that the Caucasian and the Jew has figured out how to make us comfortable. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
okay.
we have gotten too comfortable on his jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Right.
We really have gotten so comfortable on his jobs that those businesses that you talk about now, that we don't even have the respect of the business that are in our communities. We go there, and when we see one another, we automatically ask for the hookup, the deal. You see?
Right.
And I refuse to. I'm in the hood. My businesses are always based in the hood because I have to be visible to young men and young women. They have to see my presence as a black businessman.
Right.
So
I
know that's important for them to see that. And it's not them who come in, the young people. It's not the young people who come in and expect the hookup. You know, you get a one or two or three out of maybe 10 or 15. It's more so the adults that automatically, when they see you, that you're supposed to just give your stuff away to them at the price that they want it for, or else we're going to the big name store and buy it. I'm like, go ahead and do that thing. You see?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we really got some issues to overcome if we can overcome them. That's the thing, you know. I think America, Elijah Muhammad's Nation of Islam has, in my opinion, the best program for black people at the time, especially in the 60s and the 70s. It really was thriving. 50s, 60s, and 70s, the Nation of Islam was really, really thriving economically, doing for self. They did some things, after I did my research on them, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, they did some things that was unheard of in the black community. Aviation, ships in the ocean, they really did some things. But today, as just like with the rest of the society in the black community, most of the brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam, as well as out of the Nation of Islam, have become too complacent with these jobs.
Yeah.
Working for the Caucasian and the Jew, and not going deeper into our communities and building them up. And you come to a brother that is a member of the Nation of Islam. So it's not the bad.
Okay.
The teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is 100% right and exact. If we only but knew as a group of black people, that is a very good body of knowledge that I don't care what you call yourself, that body of knowledge could definitely enhance who you are as a black man and a black woman.
Right.
Today, yes, sir.
We have become so comfortable with these damn jobs that we have stopped going out into the community. We have stopped protecting the children, stopped protecting the women.
Yeah.
Because we're not in the community. You see?
Exactly.
I'm very passionate about that, bro.
Oh, yes, sir, and that there's a very good passion to have. So, and the same thing with me, too, there, Brother Robert, is because, see, where I'm at, man, too, is in the birthplace of the Black Panther Party. And when you look at their 10-point program, they did emphasize, man, on economical infrastructure, man, of controlling the businesses in the community, but also, too, controlling the four factors of production, which are land, labor, capital, entrepreneurship, or risk management. And as we all know, just as somebody with an idea who's going out here to take a risk, the whole world may laugh of him, but he'll go out there and do it. Okay, just like what your boy Steve Jobs did over there, man, in Santa Clara County. You see what I'm saying? In the mid-1970s, okay? Also, too, let's look at what Mr. Berry Gordy did, you know, when he used to be a worker at Ford Motors, and then he had took that same not concept, but he had innovated the concept of the assembly liner, and this is how you thus in turn got Motown Records. But then to emphasize there too, Robert, is that you did say that we as a people have gotten too complacent of going up here, punching these jobs. Now, I do recognize and appreciate that we all got to make a living. But what it is that in school, in elementary school, in high schools and what have you, we was taught to go out here and work for somebody else, but not to do nothing for ourselves. themselves. And then, too, Mr. Paris, I think even you and I discussed this online about how they took out all the wood shops out of high school, the auto mechanic shops out of high school, the electrical shops out of high school, because at least that you, as you were going about to get your four-year education, at least you would have some type of skills to carry you through. So what has happened is since they did this, a lot of our youth have went astray. You see what I mean? Everybody figures that they're going to go out there to Los Angeles, man, and be a big-time rapper. Man, I got news for you about something. I grew up in Los Angeles, man. Black people don't control nothing there, okay? And I don't care about Mayor Bradley. I don't care about Tyler Perry and all that old type of stuff, but you are not doing no moving and shaking in the city of Los Angeles, sir. No. So they will prop you up. They'll let you go up there, act a buffoon, you know, just like look at the stuff that Bill Cosby went through. Although me personally, I don't see why he would have to do that to get with these women. It's because the only thing he would have to have done was go out there on Ventura Boulevard in his limousine, and he would have them flocking over there by the thousands. And then I hate to say, and of course, as we all know, is that the San Fernando Valley and what have you is the porno capital of the world. So that's what's happening with a lot of our women who are going out there with that as well, too. And I'm saying that there in response to what I've been seeing over the net in regard to Ms. Jill Scott. Okay, but however, the thing is Brother Robert has emphasized, and then as you have discussed too, Mr. Paris, is us doing for ourselves. Now, what will happen is that as we acquire this wealth, then we can go up here and place politicians at the local level in the STL, in the Mile High City, here in Angel Town, Panther Town as well, too, at the local level, particularly in regard to controlling these police officers, you know, who are murdering us. And the reason why, in my opinion, that they're doing it is because we don't have no economical power. Now, let's look at the dump. Now, the dump, you know, he made his money. It was inherited to him. He was in the casino business. He's in the hotel business and what have you. But one thing that he did as he started consolidating his power is that he put the emphasis on white unity or these alt-white organizations, okay? So now, when we had President Obama, I appreciate the fact that he was the first black president, what have you, graduate of Harvard. You know, him and Michelle, you know, both are Harvard graduates. Michelle was born over there on the south side of Chicago and all that. Great, beautiful, fine and dandy. But what about all these questionable police shootings that the president did not, you know, I'm talking about Obama, did not, you know, intervene in? And he could have done it with executive orders. It's because, you know, your boy Trump, as soon as he come up there in office, executive order this, executive order that, boom, 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 and he's going on serving the agenda of his constituents. And I posted up on my wall, hey, white America, never apologize for how you honestly feel, and this is what you did with the election of Donald Trump. Great. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Now let's emphasize and going out here acquiring some political might and but basically some commercial and business right, you know, as Mr. X, you know, had emphasized on it right here. It's because you see, people, it's up to us to take care of us. And then what will happen is Malcolm has said in some of his lectures, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. X, about emphasizing, you know, the man being the head of the household, providing for the family, because then a woman will say, hey, I'm proud, that's my husband. And the children will say, hey, I'm glad that's my daddy right there. But now the image of the black male that they got now today, you know, throughout the social media and in American mainstream, going around with pants sagging, you know, can barely talk, MF this, B.I. that, doing this stuff with this rap music. Now, keep in mind, I appreciate the art form of the rap music. And do let me say on this here in our intro that there was Revolution is Love by Asada Shakur, and we all know who she is. And then from what I understand, she had even made a statement in regard to the rap music, is that it could convey a very, very positive, powerful message within the black community. But then, as just Mr. X had pointed out, the powers that be that are non-black, you know, they weren't having it. You see, right. And this is why you hear a lot of these rappers today that made all the money in the 1990s. Now they out here flat ass, broke, strung out on drugs, got 10 different babies, mamas, the IRS is going after them and things of this nature here. Why? Because they did not have no proper education or mentorship about how to manage that money. But however, let's look at D.L. Hughley and let's look at to Jay-Z, and let's look at P. Diddy. They did a very, very good job of it. And then from what I understand, that Ice Cube is coming up a little bit as well, too. And what I mean by that, as far as moving and shaking, you know, in the industry, as opposed to going, well, hey, Master Charlie, I got this new rap record here, Degrade My Woman, Degrade Myself. I got B.I. in here. I got N.G.R. in here again and again and again and again. But, oh, Master Charlie, yeah, man, come on with it. He's making all the money, you know, BSing the young man out of his royalties and what have you, because what they do, they come out there to Los Angeles, man, you know, they see all that glittering gold and all that, and they sit up there in the Century City Towers, you know, signing all this paperwork that they're not writing and not reading, and this is thus in turn, man, how they're losing their commissions and their revenues. You see what I'm saying? Except for those, you know, that we mentioned previously, you know, that are emphasizing and rebuilding that up. And then another thing that we got to emphasize too in the community, rather if it's South Central Los Angeles or St. Louis or the South Side of Chicago and Harlem, New York as well too, of treating ourselves with the utmost of courtesy, dignity, and respect. Because, man, I tell you, when I'm in that Bay Area, man, and I travel on that BART train, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit, right, all you see, man, is everybody there coming out of the tech world. Everybody's coming out of SF, man, you know, San Mateo County and what have you. Everybody's on a laptop, cell phone or whatever, and they're getting smooth paid. But I'm seeing every other group, you know, enjoying this except one, and I don't have to tell you which one that is. Then to find out that we only are making up 3% of the workforce over there in Silicon Valley. And if it wasn't for us consuming it, using these products and what have you, man, I doubt it very, very seriously if they could remain in businesses, because don't nobody spend money like we do. It's because soon as the money comes in our community, man, it leaves the black community, man, within the next 5 minutes. But other groups, when they get money in their community, man, they circulate that revenue 5, 6, 10, 12 times, upgrading the quality of life in their community. You see what I mean? So when it comes on, absolutely, yes, for sure. And then, of course,
our money doesn't even stay in the community a full day, brother.
Exactly. Yes, sir, exactly. You see, and this is where we...
group economics.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That is the purpose of this podcast, you know, for today, you know, is doing with the group economics. And then, of course, this excellent program, you know, that Brother Robert X is doing, that I'm definitely getting off into it. But then also, too, as we acquire the wealth, then that means that we can build up our educational infrastructure, we can build up our political infrastructure, and we most definitely can build up our commercial infrastructure. But we have to start with the babies. We have to get them educated. This is why I'm all in favor of the homeschooling for our youth, is because I've seen a lot of black parents, you know, taking their kids out of these indoctrination centers, as I call them, is because in Denver, and I'm quite sure in STL, just like in South Central Los Angeles, you know, the kids is going to school. What's the first thing you're being introduced to? Police brutality and gang activity and narcotics usage. Straight out. And then I remember as a child in the 1960s, man, going to elementary school, man, and then the teacher says, oh, well, we're going to have the police officers coming in with, and the LAPD comes in, and guess what they're passing around, gentlemen? Every different type of drug they got off in this little box, man. You know what I mean? You know, it's because they planting this in the child. And then, of course, we all do know how the cookie jar theory works. You tell the child don't put his hand in the cookie jar, what's the first thing the child going to do? Is put his hands in the cookie jar, okay? Now, keep in mind, don't nobody force nobody to go out here and use no drugs. But the point is that they emphasizing it on our youth, exposing them to it. So just out of the curiosity of with them being children, then the next thing you know, well, hey, I want to go check it out. I want to see what this is all about. And that same daggone police officer who's coming in there showing you that garbage is going to be the same one who's going to be arresting you, if not shooting you, 10 years later. You see what I mean? Yeah, so it's very, very, very important, you know, that we definitely emphasize this commercial infrastructure. Now, and I'm going to say it again, we acquire the wealth, then what we could do, we can go get the politicians and the political people that will take care of our interests, because I'm looking at these two gubernatorial races, one in Florida and the other one down there in Georgia, from what I understand, where you got a lot of this voter suppression going on. But, however, with revenue, with capital, you see what I'm saying? We could work that in our favor as well, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, without a doubt. Yes, sir.
I've said this for the last 7-8 years now. You know, the change has to definitely start in the children. But here's the deal.
Yes.
With starting the change starting from the children, that means that some adult is going to have to start teaching the children. So how does this message get into the adult's head to go into the child's head? Now, the churches, the mosques, the synagogues, all these places, the black leaders, all these places where multitudes of black people gather, for whatever reason the event is they're gathering for, those are the focal starting points, in my opinion, at the church. There's no way that the church or mosque or synagogue or Kingdom Hall should collect any type of revenue and then not feed back into the congregation knowledge of black businesses in the community and knowledge of how to create black businesses in the community. There is absolutely no reason why that shouldn't be taking place, you know, because if you get money out of it, you need to be feeding us knowledge of where the black businesses are and how to create a business for ourselves. See, so that's one of the very first places, those are the very first places, in my opinion, that message should come out every time that we congregate together. Every time.
Right.
It should be.
Yes, sir.
Every time you mention Jesus' name or Allah's name or whoever that entity be, you should be mentioning a self-sufficient plan as well. That's what should be happening.
Well,
yes, sir.
Point Brother Rob, Dr. Nellie Foley Jr. tells us, you know, we need to be constructive with our conversations. So often we'll meet up. We'll have these get-togethers, you know, we get to hugging and bouncing back ideas. But at the end of the day, what are we doing to make the black nation rise? What are we doing to elevate our communities? What are we doing to motivate the masses of our people that it's up to us? Ain't nobody going to come save you. There is no white savior. It's up to you.
That's right. Exactly. And that's real talk. You see what I'm saying? It's because, too, like out here on the West Coast, is that I'm seeing like a lot of these other groups of people that will come like from Pakistan, India, Asia, even some of the foreign Eastern Bloc nations, as they used to call them and whatnot. And the first thing I notice that there's, you know, I'll go into the store, give me a pack of chewing gum or something of the effect. Well, hey, what's up, my brother? What's up, my brother? What's up, my brother? First place, man, I'm saying, this is what I'm saying in my mind. First place, man, I'm not your brother, number one. Two is, man, you're a parasite to my community. You see, reason being, because we don't have no innovators to put up the necessary facilities that we need to maintain our daily existence, you see. And then, once again, as Brother Robert had pointed out, that I have to agree with, well, hey, we just taught to go get the job, to be complacent in the job, and not taking no innovation there, taking it there to the next phase. You see what I mean? And then also, too, and I do recall, too, Rob, that when the Nation of Islam was very, very popular, you know, emphasizing the black businesses and what have you. And then, of course, when the heavyweight champ was with him in his heyday, you know, he had emphasized a great deal of doing for the community and doing for self. Is because there is a clip that I got of him, man, where he's either talking to David Frost or one of those reporters from England, right? So he's at Deer Lake getting ready to go reclaim it, and he's on his way to Zaire to go reclaim the crown from Big George. So Ali is there, and he says, well, hey, man, you know, I try to emphasize to our community about controlling the supermarkets, about controlling the banks, man, you know, about controlling, you know, our own economics, you see. And one thing I did respect him is that during a lot of his talks, when he was on talk shows and what have you, he would emphasize to the kids, hey, go get educated first, then worry about football. Go get educated first, then worry about boxing. Go get educated first, then worry about baseball, so you can become the owners of the team where you can control the revenue that you and yours are generating. You see what I mean?
Right.
Just like his brother Robert had pointed out here about Uber and Lyft. And like I said, Robert, we spoke this on the phone, and I will say it on air, man. I will take this program right to their front door, man, and go talk to their drivers. Oh, yes, sir, I will. I most definitely will, you see. And so this is what has to be brought back off into the community, you see. And then also too, I've heard a lot of my youth that say, man, I ain't no brother, man, I'm from such and such crew. Well, I ain't no brother, I'm from blah blah blah's crew and all that. But it's very interesting that when you emphasize black people killing black people, but I don't see these other races going out there doing this here to themselves too, you know, and in their cities where they have gang activity, just like with the rap industry. NGR this, NGR that, B.I. this, B.I. that, you see. But you don't hear these other groups of people who try to do rap music use derogatory terms on their own. So let's see some equal opportunity in that right there. So therefore, if you offer equal opportunity, then you should not have no objection of these other groups of rappers coming out here using self-degrading, self-hatred terms on them as well, too. I mean, if we got equal opportunity here, you know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know,
you see, if
they,
yes, sir, go ahead.
They're controlled. The rap industry, the music airwaves, all that's controlled. If it ain't, if it's not my cousin, then it's my uncle type of situation with that. If it ain't my
yes,
uncle,
sir,
then it's my best friend. All of those
yes,
entities
sir.
Are controlled. The music that is selected to come out is controlled. It's just like when I go to the trade shows, I go to this fashion show called the Magic Show. It's the biggest fashion trade show globally. So when you go there, you actually get to see what's about to hit the streets, what trend is about to hit the streets. But they select those trends. So if when the LGBT and when the men becoming more feminized. Well, that's in the fashion industry, the dress change. You know, when hip hop was first getting started, we was in Timberland boots and sagging baggy jeans. You know, we looked like roughnecks. You know, but it wasn't feminine looking. You know, but then they had an agenda, feminize that black man.
Exactly.
And all that was by design. So, you know, we have to, like Ice Cube, you mentioned Ice Cube. Ice Cube started a basketball league. Ice Cube is doing some big things. He started that basketball, 3-on-3 basketball league and started playing old basketball players, I mean, big-name basketball players, Julius Irvin, Allen Iverson, all these guys are in that league with him. So, but he took a bold step, us being able to have the testicular fortitude to take them bold steps and to penetrate a market or create a market wasn't there. So that's what Ice Cube has done, and that's what we have to do. And we just got to get out of somebody else always doing it for us. It's that one commercial to drive me crazy. Greyhound, lead the drive into us. Well, leave the drive into us.
Yeah.
We want somebody to drive us. We want to lead the drive into everybody else. No, own the company as well.
Absolutely.
I want to own the companies that wholesale you the ingredients for the pie. How about that?
Exactly. You see what I'm saying? And that's where the true black power is. You see what I'm saying? Okay, gentlemen, we're in our last 2 minutes of our podcast. Anybody got any closing comments or statements?
Closing comments.
Policy. Yes, sir.
If you want tangibles from these candidates, these people that's in office right now, you need to come with a black agenda. You need to put the black agenda in these people's faces and make sure that if they're going to get your vote, they're going to push that black agenda, not this LGBTQ agenda,
right,
these other agendas, the black agenda. That's all. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parrish, for joining us.
And let me say.
Businesses. Absolutely. Go ahead, Robert. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parrish.
So for the listening audience, my name again is Robert 11X on Facebook. That's Robert 11 spelled out, ELEVENX minor, MINER. Reach out to me if you want to talk about some of the things that we have discussed. You can reach out to us. Shabaka is also on board with this new ride share company. So, guys, reach
yes,
out.
Sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, reach out to Brother Shabaka. We are all on the same team, me and Brother Shabaka is. So, definitely reach out.
Yes, sir.
And we can make sure you get on the podcast. This opportunity is something that you definitely need to be in on.
Absolutely, without a doubt. Yes, sir. And also, too, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say this here. This is Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced coming to you from San Joaquin County, California today here of November the 22nd, 2018. And we definitely appreciate our guests and we definitely appreciate our people for calling in and we definitely appreciate our listeners. And then we're going to go out with our outro with a classic from the year 1965 called Bumpin' on Sunset by Mr. Wes Montgomery. And thank you once again.